And good evening to everyone. Thanks for joining our learning together. And welcome to the Beit Midrash. Different names, Sephardic Beit Midrash. We also call it the Yeshiva Shel Mala. Because it's... we have a big schut to learn in this place. And Baruch Hashem, a lot of Torah is studied here every day. And I want to share with you a few thoughts, maybe something that you can share at your Pesach Seder, and some questions that you can perhaps ask your table, and maybe find some new answers and new thoughts. And begin with one of the early sections of the Magid in the Haggadah, which is a story of the Maaseh of the five Tanaim. It's an interesting story for many reasons, one being that it really is not mentioned in any Gemara, it's not mentioned in any Midrash. There is a slightly similar version of this story in the Tosefta, but you won't really find this particular incident, which we know from our childhood, we know so well. If we know any story about rabbis, this is one of the stories that comes to our minds, especially when we think about Pesach, and we think about the Haggadah. And I cheated a little bit because I didn't give you the preamble to this, but for those who know, the two lines that precede this section of the Haggadah are the words, "Vafilu kulanu chachamim," somebody finish it for me, "kulanu nivonim, kulanu yodim et kol haTorah." Even if you're the smartest, the most wise, you have all the information, you know Kol Torah Kula, like a lot of people in this room, you still have to say the Haggadah. You're still obligated in the mitzvah of Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim. The mitzvah is still upon you. How do we know that that's true? Maaseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, and it goes ahead and it talks about some of the five greatest Torah scholars in Jewish history. Even these guys who knew the whole thing, they were sitting down together to talk Torah, to speak about Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. Perhaps they would come up with some new chidush. Perhaps they would come out with some new limud, some new kind of learning. So you talk about role modeling, and you talk about somebody setting the tone and showing, I'm not just going to say, you know, everybody else who's never learned this before, never heard of this before, they should talk about it. This is for everybody. So that's the story, and they're in Bnei Brak, and they're coming to this place, and they're misaprim b'yitziat Mitzrayim, kol oto alayla, and the students come, and they say it's time to say Kriyat Shema. Then it goes into this halachic discussion of Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and he has this discussion that really we're supposed to be saying Kriyat Shema even at night. Sorry, the third paragraph of Shema, that's what they're referencing, the paragraph of Vayomer, we're going to add it to the Shema, and we're going to say that at night. And then the Chachamim say, we don't. And that's really what the debate is going on. And you read this and you ask yourself, well, what's the connection between A and B? I didn't put it here on the list, but it is one of the most striking points, which is, what does the story of the five rabbis sitting in Bnei Brak have anything to do with the discussion about whether we should add Yitziat Mitzrayim, the discussion about Yitziat Mitzrayim, to the Shema of nighttime? We say Yitziat Mitzrayim in the morning. We say Vayomer Hashem, Shor Tzitichem Eretz Yitzrayim, right? Yolachem Elokim, and Yoshem Elokim Emet. We do that every morning. So the fact that was added to the Aravit Shema, that was a chidush of Rabbi Elazar ben Azari. But what does that have to do with these guys sitting in Bnei Brak? What does A have to do with B? So I put a number of questions here. I'm curious if anybody actually had a thought or a discussion about what maybe some of the answers to these questions are. We'll start with that. If anybody had any thoughts, throw them out now. And we'll go into some of them in a moment. Go ahead.
The first and second, when I asked about why is it needed to mention where they were, and then the second one, when I asked about why emphasizing that they're reclining. Mm-hmm. So right now, this is after the destruction of the Beit Hamikdash, right? They're kind of in exile. They're kind of not really supposed to be doing all these traditions and doing what they're doing. So the fact that it emphasizes that they're in Bnei Brak, an occupied country where they're not really supposed to be doing what they're doing, and where it mentions that they're reclining, it shows that they're really going into the halacha. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, even though it might threaten their lives.
So is it in spite or is it despite? You understand my question?
Despite. More despite.
You understand my question?
Yeah.
Right? Are they doing it even though the situation is challenging? Are they doing it to show we're not afraid? right?
And it connects even more to the whole idea of Pesach also, because it's kind of
beautiful. Very nice. Great answers. Any other thoughts?
Maybe it shows actually how important it is to regardless of the situation, even though it's after the destruction, of how important it is to do the Seder of Pesach and talk about it.
Right. Beautiful. Right. To be able to, despite the situation, to be able to recline. And the reclining does say a certain... I saw a beautiful pshat. You can share this one as well. It's not on this, but I'll just share it now because I saw it this morning. A new idea on Manishtana. Manishtana, why don't we say Manishtana on Sukkot? It's an interesting question. Sukkot is a much more strange type of holiday. We're leaving our house. We're outside. We're in the elements. We're doing things that are less, a lot less... parallel to what we usually, what we do on Pesach. Okay, Pesach has a beautiful table, but Shabbat we have a beautiful table. Okay, we're doing some things that are different, but it's more similar. Pesach is much more similar to what we might do on another Chag than what we do on Sukkot. So one of the commentaries said that Sukkot is about Galut. And we know very much about Galut in Jewish history. We don't need to ask Manishtana on Sukkot. Because we know about that experience in Jewish history. It's the experience of freedom and royalty and feeling like no one's oppressing us and no one's on top of us. That's an experience in Jewish history that we unfortunately haven't felt enough. And we yearn and hope for more of that. So we ask that on Pesach Night. But that point, I think, is very true and it speaks to that as well. Any thoughts on why B'nai Brak and not somewhere else? Any other city in Israel? Maybe Yerushalayim? Who's in B'nai Brak? They all live in different places. They don't all live. Rebbe Elazar ben Azari lived in Yavna. He was the Nasi.
B'nai Brak was a holy city at that time also?
Because Rabbi Akiva was there.
B'nai Brak was a hilltop. There wasn't much there.
Yeah.
Because of?
Rabbi Akiva.
Because of Rabbi Akiva. They went there for Rabbi Akiva. So I want to explore this a little bit further. Because Rabbi Akiva was not the leader of the generation. Rebbe Elazar ben Azari was the Nasi. Remember the story, Masechet Brachot, Rabban Gamliel was the Rosh Shiva, he was the Nasi, and he made Rabbi Yeshua stand on his feet. He embarrassed him in the middle of the shir, he made him stand up. I don't do this to anybody. He made him stand up in the middle of the shir, and he said, you got to stand on your feet, because you defied me. Rabban Gamliel wanted to know if anybody disagreed with his opinion. Rabbi Yeshua said, no. What was the debate? Anybody remember the Gemara in Brachot? Is davening Mariv optional or mandatory? Rishut or Chovah? So Rabbi Yeshua was of the opinion that it's optional to daven Arvi. Bless you. And Rabbi Gamliel starts the shir. He says, is anybody that disagrees? And Rabbi Yeshua says, no. And Rabbi Gamliel knew, set him up, right? He knew that he held a different opinion. And he said, stand up on your feet. Kind of to make him feel bad. And everybody in the shir said, these can't go on. Because this is the third time already that Rabbi Gamliel had given Rabbi Yeshua a hard time. Long story short, they fired Rabbi Gamliel from his position. And they hired Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. He was 18 years old. That's where this whole part of the Haggadah is kind of the context of that. Getting back to this, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah was the Nasi. So it's very nice they want to go to Rabbi Akiva because he lived in B'nai Brak. You saw that in the sources. I put that source on here. That was his hometown. But he was not the Gadol Ador by any means. In fact, if you look at the other four people, so we have Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, who is the Nasi. We have Rabbi Tarfon, okay, who probably didn't want to have anything to do with Rabbi Akiva because he was the biggest guy who argued with Rabbi Akiva all over the Mishnah, all over Shas. Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva were at heads with each other because Rabbi Akiva always followed in the path of Hillel, of Beit Hillel, and Rabbi Tarfon always followed in the path of Beit Shammai. So they were opponents in Halacha. So I don't know why they would want to be hanging out with each other. And then the other two, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, were Rabbi Akiva's Rebbeim. They were his teachers. Those are the sources here I brought on the first two sources on the second page. The Yerushalmi, 13 years he was in the shir. I'm not sure it wasn't such a good thing that they didn't know his name. The Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar didn't know his name. Rabbi Akiva was quiet. Right? What does Rabbi Akiva say in Pirkei Avot? Shtika. That's the way you become smart. The less you say, the smarter you become. That was his advice in Pirkei Avot. I think it's the end of the first paragraph. So he was quiet. He was a quiet guy. Maybe they didn't get to know him so well because he was quiet. Maybe there were a lot of students in the yeshiva. Who knows? But these are his teachers. So all the people who are coming to his yeshiva are greater than him. There isn't one person on this list who's less, you know, in terms of position, in terms of status, in terms of, so all of that is something that we have to think about as well. So putting all these points on the table. And it was already mentioned here, but we can kind of throw out the question again. The most natural place for them to be is close to Yerushalayim, close to Har HaBayit. But we've already seemed to have established that this was after the Churban. And maybe not only was it after the Churban, but it was probably very close to after the Churban. Because we know who these people are. These are Tanaim who saw the Beit HaMikdash. These are people who had testimony, who knew what was. So not only are they in Bnei Brak without a Beit HaMikdash, but there's no Korban Pesach. There's no full experience of, I don't know, I always think of it as lamb shawarma. It's probably what something like that. Hummus chips, of course. But the idea behind it is they're missing the essentials of what Pesach was. And all of a sudden, they're kind of searching in the dark. How do I make Pesach? What is Pesach without the Korban Pesach? What is Pesach without the Beit HaMikdash, with all the Jews being together in Yerushalayim? And not just that, but as Ben mentioned, the situation was very grave, was very dire. And yet they're reclining, and yet they're together, and yet they're sitting and talking the whole night and learning together the whole night. And there's something to that. And obviously the students who are there to gain something as well. So what I want to share a little bit is a little bit of an approach to this topic and this question. And it goes as follows. On that night, Rabbi Akiva was clearly accomplishing something fantastic, something that doesn't happen too often. To bring Jews together who don't really get along or don't always agree on everything. By the way, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, who were both Rabbi Akiva's teachers, you may remember these two, who also argued with each other. Famous story of the Tanur Shel Achnai, right? The oven that they were fighting about, whether it's Tameh or Tahor, and then one of them started bringing all these miraculous events to prove his point, and he brought a heavenly voice, and they said, Torah lo b'shamayim. Remember that story, Masechet Bava Metzia? So these people were opponents, and they're all sitting together. So Rabbi Akiva clearly was a draw for some reason. He was drawing these people in to Bnei Brak, even though they could have been somewhere else. They could have been in Yavne, they could have been in a different city. And again, I mentioned it here in the question. The fact that it mentions a city's name is important because we have other statements in the Haggadah. Rabban Gamliel, you have to say three things every single time in the Seder. Pesach Matzah Marah doesn't say where Rabban Gamliel was when he said that, so that must be significant as well. So here's the idea that I want to share, and I think it's something that we can take to our Seder and to really raise these kinds of issues and questions, which are modern day questions, which are issues that we deal with as a people, as families, as communities. So the students are waiting outside the house. What are they waiting? What's this connection between the story of these people sitting and the next paragraph? That was the question I asked before. So if you look, the text that I gave you on the first page is Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. But if you noticed, I gave you another version, which is actually the Rambam's version. This was found in the Karaganiza. And they found a version of the Haggadah that doesn't say Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but it says Amar Lahem. Just putting in that word Lahem changes the whole meaning of the story. No longer is it two disconnected sections. Now it's these rabbis were sitting and having a discussion, and then the student said, it's time to daven shachrit, and then it says, Amar Lahem, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So who was he talking to? He was talking to the students. He turned to the students who were outside of the home, and they were waiting. What were they waiting for? Well, they were waiting to daven shachrit, to say Kriyat Shema of shachrit. But they were waiting to hear, give us something. What happened? What went on in that secret meeting of rabbis inside the room? What were you guys discussing? And he goes into this story, this discussion, this halachic discussion. But he gives them an answer that probably shocked them. Why did it shock them? Because what did he tell them? He says, "You want to hear a chidush? You want to hear something that we came out with in our discussion?" He said, "Tonight in this room, you're saying Higiyas Man Kriyat Shemashal Shachri." That's what the student said. He says, "I'm telling you that we're going to say something about Kriyat Shema of Aravit. And what's that? From this night and forward, we're going to add a paragraph to the Kriyat Shema. That was the psak that they established on that night. We're going to add the parasha of Vayomer. We're going to speak about Yetziyah Mitzrayim, not just in the morning, but in the night. And the night, of course, is not just a time of day, but it represents something. It represents darkness. It represents the world that's unclear, the world that's unrevealed, the world that hasn't yet been understood. Sometimes scary, sometimes frightening, and sometimes haunting. And to bring in the Vayomer at this time in history, at this place, at this juncture of where they were, must have had a major impact. He said, from tonight, we're going to speak about Yetziat Mitzrayim, Balelot. And the Talmidim, you can imagine, they were kind of like, well, up until now, we've been following the opinion of the Chachamim. And we didn't say this paragraph of Shema at night. We were only saying the paragraph of Shema in the morning. The Yetziat Mitzrayim, you only say by day. So this was the new halacha, but what does it mean? What does it mean? What's the big deal that they added this new paragraph of Shema? So let's go back to the point that we made about the fact that this night was perhaps the first Seder. Maybe the first Seder, maybe the second Seder after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Now just stop for a minute and consider what that means. And what that must have felt like. I don't need to mention, we know, a person loses a parent, a person goes through a difficult moment of loss. It doesn't go away so quickly. It takes time. It takes time to overcome when we lose something. And if that was just a few months, we know the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed Tisha B'Av. It's only a few months later. And they're sitting, and it's the first Pesach, and there's no Korban, and there's no Beit HaMikdash, and they're not in Yerushalayim, and they're not with all the Jewish people. And what did they decide to do? And they could. They could give up hope. They could say, you know what, we're just going to have a quiet Seder this year. We're not going to do much. We're not going to make a big, we're not going to make a big fanfare. And they said, no. We're going to go to Rabbi Akiva. Because who is Rabbi Akiva? That's the Gemara. The Gemara that I brought here, mentioned by many of the Mefarshim on the Haggadah. Who was Rabbi Akiva and why did they go to Bnei Brak? And they went to Bnei Brak because of what Rabbi Akiva was able to give them. As a worldview, as a philosophy, as a chizuk. They went to Rabbi Akiva not because he was the Gadol Hador, but because he had a perspective that nobody else was able to have at that moment in time. And his perspective was that what you see in front of you is terrible, is tragic, is horrifying. You see a fox running through the Beit HaMikdash. There can't be a greater Chilul Hashem. And they're crying, and they're crying, and Rabbi Akiva is laughing, and they're saying, what are you laughing? And he says, what are you crying? And they have this exchange, and you read the Gemara, and heard the Gemara before. And that moment at the end, when Rabbi Akiva is able to give them perspective, of Od Yeshvu Zekenim, and anybody who's been to Yerushalayim at any time, in the last however many years, you're seeing these prophecies be fulfilled in front of your eyes. So the Akiva Nicham Tanu that was 2,000 years ago, that maybe nobody else was able to appreciate, we are able to actually say, Akiva Nicham Tanu, you were right. Rabbi Akiva, he was right. But he was right then. He was able to see a future that hadn't yet developed, that was somewhere deep, deep buried under the rubble of the Beit HaMikdash. And we're not there, we're not at the conclusion, we're not yet bringing Korban Pesach, we don't have Beit HaMikdash, we're not at the final stage. But we're closer. We're a lot closer today than we were 2,000 years ago. Rabbi Akiva was able to have that perspective. And perhaps that might be the reason for the name Bnei Brak. I called the Shir the City of Light. What better, more beautiful way to speak about a place. City of Light. Bnei Brak. Right? Barak. Lightning. Right? The City of Light. That was Rabbi Akiva's town. That was his home. And maybe it's not coincidental that he lived in such a place. And the reason why the Haggadah has to tell us this is because they went there to figure out a way to have light in the middle of darkness. To have or in the middle of Choshech. In the middle of the darkest times of history. To be able to figure out how to bring or, how to bring light. And that's perhaps why they came to Rabbi Akiva. And that's perhaps what was going on in this night. The night of unity, where Rabbi Akiva brought together all the Chachamim, all the great rabbis of that time. Even when they didn't get along. In general, they didn't get along with each other in terms of their halakha, in terms of what they held. These five great me'orot, these lights of Jewish history, of the Jewish people, are coming to tell, lisaper, the story. And what does it mean to be misaper? What is the word sipur? So I brought at the end, the last source is from the Hasidic Rebbe, Rebbe Alexander, the Rebbe Meir Alexander. And what he says in the middle of the paragraph there, v'amar ha-Rebbe ha-Kadosh, it's about 7 lines down, she-be-emet, od lo higi ha-zman kriyat shema shel shachrit, v'gam ha-talmidim ayu imahem rak ha-perush huva, haya misaprim, what's misaprim? What does it mean to be misaper? It means to light up. Las livnat ha-sapir, to clarify, to give clarity, to give light, to enlighten. The Yahalom, the word Sipur comes from the word Sapir. Sapir, Lisaper, is to clarify, is to give light to something. So they're coming to that night. Misaprim b'yitziat Mitzrayim. To bring light to the darkness of their time. And who better of a person to be able to provide that for him than Rabbi Akiva? And of course they reclined. Because Rabbi Akiva gave them that ability to feel that despite what they were going through, they could still sit and say, we don't have a korban, we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, but we have Am Yisrael. And we have the potential that's here in the room. And the building starts now. We don't see it. We don't see it all developing in front of us, but Rabbi Akiva said, it is. It is. It's happening. It's happening. Maybe it won't be our generation. Maybe it will be in 2018. He didn't know. But he knew that it was happening. And that's what's going on in this night. So why, just to conclude, just to come to make sure we answer all our questions, this idea of Rabbi Elazar teaching them to speak about Yetziyah Mitzrayim even in the night, the message of that is to say, all my days, right? Kol yamai lo zachiti. But on this night, I got clarity. And I realized that after the Chorban, from this night, we're going to speak about Yetziyah Mitzrayim, not just on Pesach, but on every night. On every night, because there is an environment, perhaps, that we need to always find ways to light up the darkness, to bring light, to bring Sapir, to bring Sipur, to everything that's there. So why does he mention the Chachamim? He mentions the Chachamim. The Chachamim argue with me. And perhaps the reason for that is because that is the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal isn't just Kriyat Shema in the morning, Kriyat Shema in the night. The call is coming to tell us that the ultimate goal of all of this is right now we're going to light up the darkness as much as we can. But the ultimate goal is to bring us to Mashiach. In a way, it's not really a machloket. It's two perspectives of what our job is in history. And now the students stood outside the tent and they said, I'm glad we came. I'm glad we stayed. And I'm glad we gained from this experience. So as we go into the Chag of Pesach, and we think about the environment that Pesach brings to us, the tension of the night, the galut, the ge'ulah, those moments of darkness, those moments of light in our history. Both past, present, and hopefully future, it's only light. We stop for a moment and we say, our role in Pesach is to stop and to figure out where those things have darkness and how we can bring more or into them. And b'mehera v'yameinu, we should be zocheh together. The Seder maybe this year, wherever you'll be, if it's not in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, we should be zocheh, if it's not this year, then next year, to be ochel min hazvachim min hapsachim with the coming of Mashiach. M'her v'yameinu, amen.